And the headlines again. Following his resignation from the government, the former Deputy Prime Minister Jim Hardy is undertaking a tour of Britain's poorest council estates. His claim to be speaking for Labour's forgotten people was condemned by a government spokesman as a pathetic publicity stunt. Ministers are describing as a huge success the nationwide competition to find names for the Millennium Kittens being erected on the South Bank, but the government has refused to make any of the entries public. And police have confirmed they're treating the death of a job centre manager in North London yesterday as murder. BBC Radio 4 News.
Thank you, everyone. That was fine. What have we got for the next one?
Right, well, we're doing a piece on Jim Hardy. He's got a reporter with him on this tour. We're still trying to find out some of these cat names, but Downing Street's being really uncooperative. I'm hoping we'll get a piece from Max in West Indies.
Good.
And obviously George will be giving us an update on the murder.
Is he absolutely sure this is a serial killer?
Well, that's what he says. Bit of a choice, isn't it? I mean, why would a serial killer bother with a job centre manager in Newcastle?
£8 a banana for a pound!
Bloody hooligans! Drank their street traders. Walthamstow Market is the longest market in Europe.
And everything in it is nicked.
Lighten up, Frank, for God's sake. Come on, let's get into the job centre.
All right, thanks, police, with us. Now, George, have a look at this. This wall here. Who is it we're looking for? Some nutter with a grudge against the government.
6 days shall go, Labour. Oh, well.
Yeah. Doesn't leave much room for doubt, does it?
And the victim was the manager. How did it happen, then?
Oh, he was in his office. Here, I'll show you. Apparently some unemployed git demanded to see the manager, stormed into his office, and found him lying here.
Not unemployed git, Frank. One of the disadvantaged members of society.
Not as disadvantaged as the manager was. The cause was subsequently found to be suffocation. The victim's throat had been stuffed with leaflets saying, "Have you ever thought of a career in the police force?"
Presumably, this was first thing in the morning.
As soon as the doors opened, they hadn't even got round to noticing the message in blood. It was behind a filing cabinet.
Well, there's a point. None of the victim's blood was spilt, was it? He was suffocated.
It isn't the victim's blood, George.
Oh? What is it, then?
Forensics says it's cat blood.
Now, why cat blood?
Why Waltham, sir, if it comes to that?
The constituency of Waltham Forest and Lincoln.
Yeah, what of it?
Oh, nothing much. Just that the local member of parliament is one Marcia Nallon.
Is the Prime Minister around, Michael?
No, madam. The Prime Minister's having lunch in the city.
Oh, God.
Madam?
Whenever Kenny has lunch with new Labour's friends in the city, he comes back with some mad idea and says, "Well, you're in charge of news management, Marcia. Go and sell this to the media."
The Prime Minister takes a keen interest in new ideas.
Oh, come off it. I know you civil servants are supposed to be discreet, but you know as well as I do the PM has precisely one idea: winning the next election and carrying on as Prime Minister.
If you say so, madam.
And stop calling me madam. This is new Labour, remember? It's all Christian names and we all love each other. If you believe that, you'll believe anything.
You see, Prime Minister, Kenny, giving the bank freedom to set interest rates did wonders for credibility.
Mm. And for confidence. Those of us at the top in finance and industry thought, now here's a Labour government we can do business with.
But the measure we are proposing would do even more. It would lay to rest the last nagging suspicion that Labour is hostile to enterprise.
Well, I certainly don't want anyone suspecting that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think I can safely say it would be warmly welcomed in the newspapers. The sensible ones, that is.
And the ones whose support you'll be needing when the next election comes.
Mm.
You see, there is this slight problem that you're asking me to break a specific election promise. It's in our manifesto, you see.
But then giving independence to the bank wasn't in your manifesto. Didn't stop you doing it, though.
No, that's true. That's very true. And we'd be extremely grateful.
Conspicuously grateful.
How is the fundraising progressing for your Millennium Project? Would a substantial contribution from the private sector be helpful at all?
Well, naturally, our fundraising efforts are making excellent progress. On the other hand, we are only seeking to convince you of the intellectual merits of our case, of course. Gentlemen, this is new Labour. We are on your side.
Now, what sort of donation are we talking exactly?
The headlines again. The Prime Minister is reported to have won substantial backing from the private sector for the Millennium Kittens being built on the South Bank. The chairman of the People's Commission Against Sleaze, Lord McEwans, has defended his decision to spend 6 weeks researching corruption in the Champagne region of France. And the latest opinion poll gives the Labour Party a lead of 37 points. BBC Radio 4 News.
Richard, I'll do a piece for the 1 o'clock.
Yeah, Walthamstow is definitely the serial killer, George.
Oh, absolutely, no doubt about it.
We haven't broadcast anything about the killer's messages, have we?
Not likely. Otherwise, poor old Frank would have thousands of suspects.
Coffee.
All right,
well, now. So what you're saying is this latest killing is directly linked to the cut in Job Seeker's allowance?
In exactly the way that all the killings have been linked to government announcements about welfare and benefits.
Right, but I thought you reckoned the DG had been killed by the same person.
Yeah, well, I haven't quite worked out that connection yet.
Oh, Richard, that's the Jim Hardy piece.
Oh, right, I've listened to it. So, what's your next move, George?
I'll catch up with Frank, see if we can get some more details in the next bulletin.
Kenny, so I understand you to be saying that you're proposing to abandon our commitment to the statutory minimum wage.
Yes.
But it was in our manifesto.
Yes.
It was an election promise.
Russell, we have to face the fact that the responsibilities of government are different from the luxuries of opposition.
And you are intending to tell the parliamentary party that the statutory minimum wage was a luxury of opposition?
No.
No.
No. I'm intending that you tell them.
Me?
This is an economic measure. You are in charge of the economy.
Oh, but
Russell, be honest. What do you really think of the statutory minimum wage?
It's a crass, unworkable piece of nonsense which will drive up unemployment and do nothing to help the people at the bottom.
Exactly. So I'll have Marcia prepare the press release.
But Kenny, one of the responsibilities of office is to say one thing in private and the complete opposite in public. In public, the minimum wage is clear evidence that although we may be new Labour, we are still committed to social justice.
It's not what the city wants to hear. It's not what industry wants.
Damn it, Russell, you'll be praised to the skies for this.
Not by our MPs, I won't. What the hell will the trade union say about it?
Do you know, I've been Labour Prime Minister for 12 months, and I haven't given a moment's thought to what the trade unions think about anything.
Look, you know that in principle and in private, I agree with you, but we can't admit it to the public.
Meaning that as my senior minister, you are refusing to get up and say out loud something you know is right.
But exactly the same could be said about you.
Yes. But then I'm the Prime Minister.
Caroline, if you'd rather I made this announcement.
No, I'm the one in charge. It's my responsibility. Thanks for offering. Can I have your attention, please? Can I have your attention, please? Thank you. I'll be as quick as I can. I know how busy you all are. You know by now that the BBC is a bi-media organisation. I know that's already made a number of differences to your working life, so another one won't be too much of a shock. In order to improve the efficiency of our news gathering, we in management have decided that BBC Radio News will be moving to White City as soon as can be arranged.
Caroline, what do you mean, moving to White City?
I mean, the radio newsroom will be moving to White City to join our colleagues in television, George.
You can't do that. What's going to happen to this newsroom?
It'll be used as offices by pensions, entitlements and annuities, outside broadcasts, inside broadcasts and engineering.
Well, whose damn fool idea was that?
It was mine, actually, George. In consultation with the controller by Media Development.
Ah, Charles.
Ah, Martin.
You weren't at the by Media Development meeting. I've just commissioned a television series called The Perfect Face for Radio. I've got David Mellor to present it.
Well done, Martin.
You're not still sulking, are you?
Sulking, Martin, is the prerogative of the permanent loser.
Yes, that's what I meant. Apart from anything else, you missed my briefing on national vocational qualifications and training imperatives for a bi-media millennium.
Martin, it is very seldom that I'm reduced to football terrace crudity, and I'm sure that there is a word that suits my purpose better than bollocks.
If only I could think of it. Charles, you know how I hate pulling rank, but I must insist that you do the job you came here to do.
That is precisely my intention.
No, Charles, really, no. Even you must have given up this director-general nonsense by now.
You are looking at a man who is about to launch the great comeback wheeze.
Oh, no, Charles.
Oh, yes, Martin. Study your history. All the great men have been masters of the great comeback wheeze. Gladstone, Churchill, Jimmy Connors.
Look, will you get it into your head once and for all that the chairman thinks you're a complete swine?
The chairman is absolutely 100% convinced that I'm a complete swine.
Well, there you are.
Martin, I say again, study your history. When you look at the history, particularly the recent history of the BBC, does it not strike you that the principal quality of a director general is to be a complete swine?
Oh, Charles.
Cheerio. I may have called you a lot of things over the years, but I don't think I've ever called you a posturing lovey git, you posturing lovey git.
You just don't realise why it's important, do you?
For pity's sake, man, grow up. What the hell makes you think you're so special? All over the bloody country there are people being made redundant. And they're moving your precious newsroom. Well, pass me the bloody cleaner.
You simply do not understand, do you?
What makes me think we're special? I'll tell you what makes radio news special.
George!
That's them moving their newsroom.
Oh, then. Oh, well, never mind, old boy.
What the hell are you doing with a mobile phone?
We are all modernizers now.
Yes, old Frank's been telling me.
Well, the West Indies, my old mate. Oh, couldn't be better, old boy. I've just been into Smith's and got myself some new Atmos.
Time for a drink?
No, later, George, later. My public is waiting.
Newsroom.
Max Parker with a piece for the bulletin.
Okay, Max. Going 3, 2, 1.
Here in the sun-drenched Caribbean, we are witnessing the beginning, or is it perhaps the end, of a Greek tragedy. From Michael, row the boat ashore, to Atherton, swing your hook. From proud son of... Some proud son of Lancashire to tired old man of Antigua. They called him future England captain even when he was a boy. They call him that no more. As he sits disconsolate tonight, watching his dreams fade away, he must wonder at the cruelty of it all. And yet, as he surveys the wreckage of English cricket, he must surely ponder the words he has heard every 6 balls of his working life. It's over.
Yeah, Max, that's enough musical atmosphere.
No, it's just getting to this is the captain of your ship by Reparata and the Delron.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it's a very busy news day.
I'm right in thinking it's busy, aren't I?
Yeah, not bad. We've got George on the murders. Lord McEwen's is denying that he's imported handmade Belgian toilet paper. And Robin's been on from Westminster.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently somebody's about to make a statement, but nobody seems to know who.
Russell, don't whine. It doesn't become you.
Prime Minister, I really am most unhappy about this announcement.
Oh, very well. Perhaps Marcia.
No. With all the flack I'm getting about the Millennium Project, I really can't cope with anymore.
Of course, you could make the announcement yourself.
Yes, but I do think I ought to be above the fray, taking a broad overview.
Of course, Kenny.
No, hold on a minute. Let's think about this. Who is the most unpopular, incompetent, eminently disposable member of this government?
Harriet.
Exactly. Now, I'm going to have to kick you out, I'm afraid. My guitar tutor's coming.
All right, then. Thank you, Kenny. Thanks.
We can work, you know.
No, wrong. Completely wrong.
But if Prentice is mad enough to knock off a DG, why not stop there? What's his motive for the dentist, the job centre manager?
Yes, that's a very good question.
Well, here's another one. You've been saying all along that these killings are some sort of protest against New Labour, but I thought this man and woman played a big part in creating New Labour.
And she has to sit there and watch some smarmy get getting all the credit. And everybody despises her.
So the murders are a twisted revenge against the PM, but even if I buy that, why would she kill the Director General?
She was turned down for a job at the BBC when she left college.
For God's sake, George, if everyone who was ever turned down for a job went about slaughtering people...
It's not quite as legs as that, actually, frankly. Here, have a look at this. That's our late lamented DG's Crepno file. Just bit here, look.
1980-83, head of BBC appointments.
Interviewing applicants for BBC jobs. And I bet you a pound to a penny he interviewed Marcia when she applied. He's the one who rejected her.
BBC Radio 4, the news at 4 o'clock. The Information Minister, Marcia Mallon, has announced a wide-ranging inquiry into balance and impartiality in the BBC's political reporting. She spoke to our correspondent, Catherine Sullivan.
You see, you're at it again. Now, take the Millennium Kittens, symbols of hope, of energy, of new dawn. And what does the BBC do? Treats them as some sort of national joke.
But isn't that how everyone is treating them?
You know, at our party conference last year, the PM said this is the end of cynicism. What a pity nobody told the BBC. I mean, I even heard your crime correspondent suggesting this serial murderer is something to do with New Labour. The fact is that the BBC will use any opportunity to snipe at New Labour.
Marcia Mallon. And now cricket. And in Barbados, England were...
Your tea, sir?
Oh, how very kind.
It's not like you to turn up a cricket report.
Jenny, when you're chairman of the BBC,
You have responsibilities even greater than listening to the cricket.
Oh, Caroline Holland is waiting.
Ah, excellent.
Caroline, do come in.
Caroline, splendid.
Oh, and there's a memo on your tray marked urgent.
Lovely. I'll look at it in a moment.
Now, what is the matter with this infernal Mallon? What is up with the woman?
She seems to have a personal grudge against the BBC chairman.
Well, I'm not going to let the BBC down. People may think I'm some sort of old fool, but I take my duty to the programme makers and licence payers very seriously. I'm so serious about this. Do you know what I'm going to do? Mm. I'm going to take one of those confounded mobile phones with me to lunch so that as soon as you come up with the answer, you can let me know.
Oh, right.
Now, don't you worry. Even if it means interrupting the rose petal and lychee sorbet at Veerswamy's, this is a crisis.
Yes.
Now, I suppose I'd better read this urgent memo. Leadership, Caroline. That's what we want. Leadership.
Of course, this is not just a government. This is a project. Project, that's something we used to be given at school in woodwork. Here, young Hardy, this is your project for this term. Make a coffee table and do it in the style of Pugin, lad. It'll be trouble. Because this is it with regard to this. They don't care about you lads with no jobs. They're sat there, oh, I've had to sell out in Islington, it's too full of poor people. Oh, look out, Algercaster, I've just spilt squid ink risotto on silk tie. I'll have to go and lie down in Lanzarote for a fortnight.
Hey, turn it off,
you stink, Villa. Do you know who that is, ladies and gentlemen? It's a spy from number 10. Come down here to make sure we stay on message. Well, I've got a message for you, my son. Have some of this.
A violent disturbance broke out last night in a meeting being addressed by the former Deputy Prime Minister. In a statement, Downing Street said the rioters were a sad reminder of old Labour. The chairman of the BBC has responded to the government's announcement of an inquiry into BBC bias. Lord Crichton Potter said the corporation would hold its own inquiry into attempts by Labour spin doctors to bully and harass BBC journalists. He said
BBC reporters have been threatened down the telephone by Labour officials and tapes of these conversations will be played in public at his next It's Your Lunch meeting.
Marcia, this unfortunate unseemliness at Jim's meeting last night, it wouldn't have been in any sense deliberate, would it?
Not in any sense that can be traced to this office, no. Naturally, members of my staff were present at the meeting. It is a bit unfortunate they were all wearing pinstripe suits and loud silk ties. I understand some members of the audience took offence.
Yes, and then there were the pagers. For some reason, a pager is to Jim Hardy what a red rag is to a bull. Well, that's fixed, Jim.
I'm rather afraid it has.
Now, look, this Crichton Potter business, did these threatening phone calls to BBC journalists actually take place?
Of course they did. What do you pay me for?
Not exactly the sort of thing we want made public, though, is it? How very clever of old Potty.
That's what I can't understand. How the hell did a fool like Crichton Potter come up with this? The cunning...
My dear Charles, my dear Geoffrey, there may have been some slight misunderstanding between us.
Geoffrey, I've always prided myself on my ability to handle a big joke.
But as soon as I read your memo, I thought, that's the way to respond to the government. That'll teach them they can't push the BBC round. Firm, robust, no nonsense.
Simply seemed to me that any suggestion of weakness would merely give succour to the corporation's enemies.
Exactly my feeling. You know, Caroline Holland actually suggested inviting a few senior ministers round for an emollient drinks.
Many feet, possibly, but hardly la guerre.
Precisely.
I'm grateful that in some small way my qualities have been recognised.
Oh, I recognised them the first time I met you. Now there, I said, is a man with all the qualities of a howling shit.
Brutal, but fair. May I propose a toast to Gladstone, Churchill and Jimmy Collins?
I just don't think it's the right way to handle government ministers. I go for a bit of quiet diplomacy.
Who was it told you to tape all conversations with spin doctors?
Yes, all right, I know. But I meant it as a protective measure, not so we could play the tapes in public. George, you don't think I'm too nice to be Director General?
No.
Thank you, that's very reassuring.
BBC Radio 4, the news at 4 o'clock. Within the last few moments, there's been a sensational development at Westminster. We're going over live to our political correspondent, Nicola Ellis.
About 5 minutes ago, a round robin was handed to journalists here at the Commons demanding the return of Jim Hardy to the government. Astonishingly, it contained the signatures of 150 Labour MPs. With me is one of the signatories, Giles Caron. Mr. Caron, why did you sign this round robin?
I'm a loyalist moderniser. But we cannot go on treating the poorest people as the scapegoats when certain members of this government are spending money like it's going out of fashion.
Are you thinking of Lord McEwen's, who chairs the People's Commission Against Sleaze?
I'm not naming names. I'm just saying you can't abandon the people at the bottom, call yourself the Labour Party, and then spend 20,000 quid on a gold-plated fish kettle.
So you're demanding the return of Jim Hardy?
I may not agree with everything he says, but I know principles when I see them. And my God, this government could do with some.
Not a syllable is uttered in this party that I don't know about. You knew this was going to happen, did you?
No, I just don't understand it.
But have you got something else on your mind? Something distracting your attention from the job? I mean, how in hell's name could 150 of our own backbenchers do something like this and we don't get a whisper? Not a whisper!
There's obviously been a failure of intelligence.
Well, whose intelligence had you in mind, exactly?
I'll begin repairing the damage immediately.
No, I think it might be best if you left me to manage the Labour Party, thank you. I'm not entirely lacking in skill in that regard. There will be an emergency meeting of the Parliamentary Party at 7 o'clock. Organise it.
Yes, Prime Minister.
And get a message to Jim Hardy, wherever he is. Tell him he has my invitation to address this meeting immediately before I do.
Yes, Prime Minister.
Well, don't look so surprised, Marcia. You don't seriously think I'm going to miss guitar practice because of some trifling nonsense down the road, do you? Oh, and Marcia, it would be very nice if this did not happen again.
Yes, Prime Minister.
And I will survive as long as I know how to love. I know I'll tell you the town. And I said, here for me, but a thing. Rum-pum-pum-pum-pum-pum.
Comrade,
for God's sake.
I can see three Labour ministers in front of me. Nasty, brutish and short. Yeah. I've spent this last week on council estates. Rough, run-down council estates where poor people live. Last May, those people voted Labour. They voted in hope after 18 years of a party that didn't care if they lived or died. The darling buds of May. They don't last long when the wind of poverty starts to blow.
Oh, this is like something out of the 1970s.
Education, education, education. Those poor people, they can't send their children to posh schools like Labour ministers. They can't stay here, Altara, Al-Sebastian, can't go to a local comprehensive. It's full of poor people. We'll have to send them to St. John les Deux Églises. And if he learns to eat risotto and talk bollocks at the same time, he might grow up to be Prime Minister.
You'd never believe this, would you?
Well, Marcia was supposed to have that party by the you-know-what.
But they're loving it.
He's actually a good speaker in his way, that bloke. You know, everybody thinks he's an idiot. He's not, though, is he?
That's out for New Labour.
They've all been marching through the lobbies like good little children. All of this was seething underneath. It just took somebody with the guts to resign.
Anyway, I can't stand here. It's all right if I do my piece for the bulletin.
Yeah, whatever. I want to see the Prime Minister get out of this one. I think we'll have any difficulty filling the bulletins tonight, to be honest.
Damn right we won't. I think murder's a bit off the agenda for the moment.
Right, see you later.
Oh, look, the PM's getting up.
God, he looks livid.
Ladies and gentlemen. Oh, and comrades. It is my privilege to lead a listening government. Well, all right, I've listened. Now you listen. 4 years ago, you elected me to lead this party. That is exactly what I propose to do. I'm told that modernisation is a soundbite. Okay, try this for a soundbite. What we are engaged upon, we, all of us, New Labour, is nothing less than the rebirth of a great country. I never said it would be easy. I never told the British people it would be easy. You talk to me about Labour values. To give people the option of spending their lives living on benefits paid for by the rest of us, is that a Labour value? Well, is it? To be soft on those who choose crime, preying like parasites on ordinary, decent people, is that a Labour value? Well, is it? If I may finish with the words of Harold Wilson, I know what's going on. I'm going on.
Come on, Marty, you have work to do.
That was magnificent.
I'm glad you thought so. Ah, Russell.
What did you think of the speech, Chancellor?
Oh, I thought it was a lot of self-righteous, pompous humbug.
Yes. You know, if only you had a better line, pompous humbug, you might be doing my job instead of me. Funny that, isn't it?
Hysterical.
I think I might let myself off work for one night, meet some friends. I like to have my friends around me.
I'm sorry?
It's what Jim Callaghan said, Marcia, the night he sacked Barbara Castle.
BBC Radio 4. It's 10 o'clock. The news with Harriet Cass. The Prime Minister has crushed a rebellion by backbenchers at Westminster. In what political observers are calling the most powerful speech of his career, the Prime Minister said he would not compromise with the values of old Labour. We'll have more on that in a moment. First, news just in. We're going live to our crime correspondent, George Cragg, in central London.
The chairman of the People's Commission Against Sleaze, Lord McEwen's, has been found dead at the commission's headquarters in Belgravia. Police are in no doubt that he was murdered and that it was the work of the serial killer who struck in Walthamstow, East London, only a few days ago. After a day of high political drama, murder is back on the agenda.
In the Chair was written by Mark Cavendish and starred Michael Williams, Barry Foster, Hugh Laurie, Stephen Fry, John Bird, Richard Griffiths, Rebecca Front and Kenneth Branagh. And also featured Susie Brand, Peter Woodcourt, Simon Greenall, Darren Boyd, Brian Parr, Henrietta Garden and Harriet Cass. The music was composed by Paul Mottram. In the Chair was produced by Paul Schlesinger.